This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hour two underway. Grant and Danny. 106.7 The Fan. A black Under Armour polo, khaki shorts, and we're going barefoot in the basement today. Danny, how are we looking over there?
Barefoot. Athletic short pants and a black Under Armour top as well. I don't think I'm going to do any athletics today, but just in case, I'll be ready.
Let's go power ranking style. Had a couple of discrepancies in our top fives last week. Let's see how they look now. Picture getting slightly clearer after a second week of football, a little bit more information to add to the puzzle here. So let's start with team number five in your power rankings, Danny. Who do you got?
The Los Angeles Rams. Very impressive to me, going on the road defensively, shoving it on Philadelphia. Now, I know Philadelphia's offense is not what we would like to call good at the moment, but they did what they're supposed to do. They held them to points in the teens and ran away with it with a bunch of different offensive weapons. They are playing pretty well. Impressive week one win over Dallas. Impressive week two win on the road against Philadelphia. The Los Angeles Rams are my number five squadron.
I'm going to put the Pittsburgh Steelers at number five in my power rankings. They survived an early scare from the Giants, who I thought played okay on Monday Night Football, and were able to pull away from them as the game went on. Then you fast forward to this past weekend in Denver, was pretty game in the second half in trying to make that a contest. They were frisky, but the Steelers, again, did what they had to do. I like what I've seen from Ben Roethlisberger. I was curious about his arm strength. I think he's got plenty of it. And I talked about this yesterday, but their wide receiving core is legit.
It's very
Deontay
good.
Johnson is fantastic. He's leading the team with 149 yards. Believe it or not, Chase Claypool, who's got like three catches, is second on the team with 127 yards. He had a touchdown of almost 90 yards this past week.
I love him.
And then
so
their
much.
Possession guy who's chewed people up is Juju Smith-Schuster. He's third on the team in yardage. James Washington looks like he's a lot better, can run more routes. So I like where they are on offense. We know the defense led by T.J. Watt coming off 2.5 sacks, and Devin Bush leading the team with 11 tackles is going to be very good. They're number five on my list right now. Number four for you, Danny.
The Green Bay Packers, I begrudgingly have to admit it. I still think it's going to come back and bite them at some point that they didn't upgrade this offense at all while Aaron Rodgers is still a maestro. And it hasn't through 2 weeks. They've been unbelievable on offense, taken advantage of a couple bad defenses, but they've done that. They've scored a billion points, and defensively they are good enough. They are 2-0. They are humming along. Aaron Rodgers is still a superstar. Do not kick dirt on that grave just yet.
Yeah, Packers number four for me. They're averaging 42.5 points a game. 43 in week one against the Vikes, 42 in week two against the Lions. They won by three touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers didn't have to do anything, really, more than just kind of complete some short and intermediate passes this past week. But on the season, he has six touchdowns, no picks, a 119 rating, completing 68% of his passes. Aaron Jones is the leading rusher in the NFL with 234 yards. He's averaging 7 yards per carry. Their second running back, Jamal Williams, averaging 5.6 per carry. Their third running back, who they just drafted, A.J. Dillon, averaging 4.5 per carry. So they're running the ball effectively. They make big plays in the passing game, chunk yards to Devontae Adams, one of the best receivers in football. He's already got 17 catches for almost 200 yards. I don't know if their defense is going to be good enough start to finish this year if they play the way that they have so far. But for right now, this moment, they're an easy number four for me in my power rankings, which gets me to number three. And I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks here. The Russell Wilsons, if you will. He has thrown 9 touchdowns and has 11 incompletions on the season. Seattle, we knew coming in, would be a playoff team. The question was, are they going to be able to overtake San Francisco? Are they going to be better than the Rams, than the upstart Cardinals? So far, they are the most impressive team in the best division in football. There is a chance all 4 teams in the West make it. That's a juggernaut. And of all 4 of those teams, the club I'd least like to play this weekend is Seattle, and it's not that close based on how their quarterback's playing. They got things to sort out on defense, but I'll put that team number 3 in my power rankings.
I almost had them at 5. I was debating between them and the Rams, and you touched on it. It's that defense that I don't trust, but as soon as you started talking, I go, you know what? They should have been my number 5 team just because of how great Russell Wilson is at this point. They'll end up in my top 5 power rankings, I think, more often than they won't. Probably 5.5 or 5A this year. My number 3 team, you already touched on them. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are the truth. I think that defense might end up as the best in football this year, although they, you know, gave up a couple things against Denver this weekend. I think that's going to sustain them offensively. I think they're going to continue to get better. They're going to be what they were a couple years ago. They don't have Antonio Brown or the easy button, but Chase Claypool, I love him so much. I love their receiving core. James Conner looks spry after a terrible week 1 where he looked like me coming down the stairs in the morning. They're good. I think they're good on both sides of the ball. I think they're really well coached. I think the Steelers are excellent. Number 3 team for me.
Who do you got number 2?
Kansas City Chiefs. They've done nothing wrong. All they're going to do is be right there in everyone's top 5 until they have a hiccup. But their offense is great. Defensively, they're there to turn you over, make a couple different plays, stop you from passing effectively. Kansas City Chiefs, defending Super Bowl champions, are my number 2 squadron.
So I'm making my decision in real time here. And I think I'm going to put the Chiefs 2nd as well. I didn't want to move them out. I said last week it's going to be hard when you're the defending Super Bowl champions and you don't lose to lose that top spot. But they went to overtime against the Chargers. It was a way less convincing performance than Baltimore's. If you look at some of the metrics like DVOA and some of the things that account for who you're playing against and you know the downs and distances and all the different variables in football, the Ravens have far and away been the best team in the league through 2 games. It's not close. So I got to put them number 1. They can beat you in a lot of ways. They can win a 3-0 game where they don't move the ball and they just shut you out on defense. They can throw the ball if you have a bad secondary. They can do what they did this past week and just hand it off 800 times and never have to throw the ball. They're number 1 in football for me.
Me too. They're the best team. They've added enough pieces on defense where that group is now, it's not the 2000 group that you know took Trent Dilfer to a Super Bowl, but they're very good. They're going to be a top 7, top 8, top 10 type unit. As you said, how would you like to die today? How would you like to get beaten up today? You could pick your poison, choose your weapon. Whatever you want to do, we can do it to you. We'll run it down your throat at 7-8 yards a pop because our quarterback is dynamic, or we can throw for 1,000,000 yards and beat you however you'd like to be beaten. They are a juggernaut. They don't lose in the regular season pretty much. I think they've ripped off 12 straight regular season wins and dominated opponents in a comical way, basically, on that trip. And they got the reigning MVP. They are the best team in football right now. Will they become, early wintertime or in 2021? Will they be standing? Did they fix enough so they don't get Tennessee Titans again? I don't know, but right now, to me, they're the best team.
So my top 5, Ravens 1, Chiefs 2, Seahawks 3, Packers 4, and Steelers 5.
The L.A. Rams 5, Green Bay 4, Pittsburgh Steelers 3, Kansas City Chiefs 2, and them Ravens, they're on number 1.
So the one difference, you've got the Rams on your list, no Seahawks. I've got Seattle all the way up at 3, not pictured for you, and no Rams. Grant and Danny on 106.7, the Fan. Brian Baldinger at the bottom of the hour in 18 minutes. Our buddy John Clayton, longtime ESPN analyst, wrote a piece yesterday about 5 teams who should start panicking already after just 2 games. We'll go through those teams and see if we agree or disagree that it is time to panic. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. Guys, Grant Paulson for my friends at EMP 180 Weight Loss. You know how much weight I dropped when I was on the EMP 180 Weight Loss program with my friends. They've got offices in Tyson's. They've got one out in Ashburn. They're set up now in Maryland as well, in Rockville. You can go to their Woodbridge location all over the area. And my brother said, dude, what is going on with you here? You're dropping weight. You're looking healthy. So they got on the program as well. I've had tons of friends text me, hit me up, say, I hear you talking about this on the air all the time. Is it true? Is it the truth? Should I really do this? And every single time it's the same answer. Absolutely. but only if you want to make your life better and improve your health and add years to your life. Don't wait. Start now. Take immediate control of your health. Start your change now and be healthier in 2021. Here's what you can do. Get fit before the holidays. Call EMP 180 today for their specially priced six-week, six-pack weight loss and wellness package. Call 855-888-0180, 855-888-0180, or visit emp180weightloss.com. Brian Baldinger's on the show in 12 minutes. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. I'm rewatching the encore presentation of Washington's game against Arizona, and I just saw the Ron Rivera challenge that Arizona didn't get their 12th man off the field.
Good challenge.
And I know that they were down 27-9 at the time, and it seemed to people who were already mad and frustrated watching the game like nothing. But it is such a big deal to me. I don't ever remember this team, my team, getting that challenge flag thrown and getting that play overturned. And it was actually critical. That play was a little check down to Steven Sims, who got a yard and got tackled, and it was going to set up a 4th and 5 when they were down 27-9. They would go on, obviously, to score on that drive, because after that challenge was won by Rivera, it was a 3rd and 1, and Haskins made the good throw on a corner route over the shoulder to Steven Sims, who was maybe his best throw of the day, honestly. But instead of 4th and 5, it was 3rd and 1 after they won that challenge. So big, big deal. They ended up getting the points to get to within 12 at 27-15. The Cardinals got the ball back with 6:15 to go and went on a drive of their own. But
adults.
It was such a great challenge.
Yep, adults. It's the there is a line of demarcation. There is either you have it or you don't have it. Organized, prepared, well-drilled teams look a certain way. They execute those things that you can control. And again, I go back to the first that I can remember, quick snap in the history of the Washington football team. When there was a play that was close, instead of taking the full 40 seconds and hemming and hawing, they have some sort of automatic call, right, where you just get to the line and go. I've dreamed of this. I've dreamed of doing it the way the good teams do it. And that once that challenge rule was implemented with how it works and that there's time and there's a review, people figured out the strategy is you force a coach to make a quick decision. You don't let replay booth Reggie sit up there and look at it 6 or 7 different times from all the different angles to then, signal the coach to throw that little hanky onto the field. You don't do that. You hurry. You force the coach to make a decision, or you get the playoff one or the other. They've never done it, and they did it this past weekend. It made me so happy.
It's great. It almost is, it's one of those things where the play is close, and you get in your quarterback's headset immediately and say, challenge one, or whatever. And you have 3 different play calls, so it's not overly predictable that you're just going to hand the ball off straight ahead. But he starts barking, challenge one, and everyone knows, okay, we got to get our bleeps to the line of scrimmage and just snap the ball. Because even 2nd and 10 on a no gain here is better than the negation of the play that we just made. So it is worth it to us to get this play off and set up basically 2 plays to try to get 10 yards because we failed to move the ball on first down. Then whatever could come if they get reversed. But, yeah, they finally got that playoff. It was a big, big deal. Interesting from this week, I saw this in John Clayton's column, which we're about to get into. So kickers, we talked about how woeful their week one was. It was one of the worst kicked weeks in football history. Right at 71% of the converted attempted field goals. Week two, 53 of 57 attempts knocked through by kickers. 93%. That's about as good as you're going to find at any point through the year. So they went from one of the worst weeks as a group to one of the best weeks that you could possibly have, making 53 of 57 field goals. But speaking of John Clayton, he wrote about 5 teams that are in big, big trouble after 2 games. We figured we would go through them and try to figure out if there is a team that might be able to turn their season around in this crop.
So normally you don't panic after 2 weeks. Well, statistically, maybe you should, because you start 0-3, 0-2 teams very rarely come back and make the playoffs. We usually do this dance in Washington, by the way, where somebody finds the percentage and it's only 12% or 8%, whatever it is, right? So here they are. Here are the teams that are in deep trouble, according to John Clayton. Start right here. The Atlanta Falcons. Yep, they are in dire straits. Their offense is good. That's not the issue. The issue is they, A, find ways to lose games. B, defensively, they're horrendous. They are just horrendous. It might they're in contention right now with for worst defenses in the league.
Now, they're not going to make the playoffs. I didn't think they'd make the playoffs anyway because the Saints and the Bucs are both better than them. They're the type of team as a decent third team in their division that could have benefited from the added wild card and the expanded postseason field, but I don't see it just watching them, and as you said, with their defense, which is tumultuous. But that having been said, if we're ranking them against some of these other teams in terms of chance to turn their season around, I actually, because of their offense and Matt Ryan and their passing game, I like them more than, say, Denver at 0-2 without Locke right now going to their backup quarterback. I like them more than Houston, which I think is now paying the price for 2 or 3 years of bad trades and bad decisions. I like them more than Philadelphia, which has a completely beleaguered offensive line that's banged up and a quarterback in Carson Wentz that isn't playing well. I mean, Minnesota, they've got a horrible defense. Their offense has been probably pretty good in week one and terrible in week two. Kirk Cousins is coming off the worst performance he's had in years, and they haven't even been able to use Dalvin Cook because they've been down so substantially in these games, and they've lost Stephon Diggs' big play potential. So I might like them more than the Vikings to turn their season around too.
Yeah, so the other teams, you touched on them, Denver, Houston, Minnesota, and Philadelphia. The only team out of this group that I still like, and again, I'm with you, their decision-making with Bill O'Brien as the general manager have been reprehensibly bad, but Houston, they've played Kansas City and Baltimore. I think 30 teams would lose those games to those two teams because they're the two best teams in football right now. The Chiefs are excellent, and so are the Ravens. So Houston, to me, is not dead in the water just yet in a division that lacks a juggernaut. Tennessee's on top at 2-0, but have you been blown away by Tennessee? Not really. They're fine, and that's kind of what Tennessee's been here of late. But Houston's the only team I wouldn't bury just yet. Those other teams, though, have a lot of work to do. If I'm picking a second seed for a possible turnaround, Philadelphia, for the same reasons. They get healthy. This division lacks a juggernaut.
Titans beat the Broncos by 2 points in week one, got a kick at the horn, and they beat the Jaguars by a field goal at the gun in week two. So, yeah, I don't feel necessarily great about Tennessee so far, but I do think they're better than Houston. We're going to find out about the Texans this weekend, though, finally. They got a 1 o'clock kick in Pittsburgh against the Steelers. Pittsburgh's 2-0, but they are not Baltimore and they are not Kansas City. And if you are a team that could make the playoffs or could be in the mix in the AFC South, you have to win this game if you're Houston, and it is winnable against Pittsburgh. They've got the Vikings next week who are going to be hungry as well. That's a game they should probably win, but if they could beat Pittsburgh, I could see them getting to 2-2 and even in their record and being back on track. We can ask Brian Baldinger about the Texans and some of these struggling teams in football. He joins us next, one of the best football guests in the game on Grant and Danny in just a moment. They're 1-1 in two games. They surprise the Eagles, and then they kind of crash back down to earth against the Cardinals. How do you think we should feel about them so far?
I think, obviously, the strength of the team is the defensive line. It was against the Philadelphia Eagles, and, they hit Carson Wentz that day 14 times, and they sacked him 8 times. And, but we expected that. I mean, you have as much invested in the defensive line. Watching Chase Young, he's as advertised. He's been good. But I think they've made a lot of mistakes, especially in the back end of their defense, and that's got to be frustrating because they've made some, that's been a problem for them. But I think, offensively, look, they're very, very young. They've got rookies in a lot of key spots right now, and they're counting on them. And so there's going to be, a bunch of pains, going up against a team like Washington, or against like Arizona. That's a tough assignment because that's a difficult offense to defend. Kyler Murray is just really gifted. And, the deep shots he took and got behind the defense last week, that's going to happen to a lot of teams because you're going to keep your eyes on number one, Kyler Murray, and he's going to get over the top on you. And then they're a much improved defense from a year ago right now. So I think to be 1-1 after this against two teams that I thought were thought to be pretty good before the season started, I think they got to feel good about themselves.
Brian, take this wherever you want to take it here. Who's the worst 2-0 team, and who's the best 0-2 team?
Well, I would say that Houston's the best 2-0 team. I mean, they came out of the box, had to play Kansas City and Baltimore, who, by the way, just play on Monday night. You watch how good both those teams are. The Ravens just bludgeoned them to death last weekend. I mean, just it was bloody. And then week one, Pat Mahomes came out like it was Super Bowl Sunday and lit them up. But I don't think they're 0-2 bad, although they played Pittsburgh this week and they might be 0-3. But their schedule hasn't been too favorable so far. And I don't know, the best 2-0 team right now, it's hard to go against the Ravens. They're just so complete in how they play the game. They simply don't have a weakness on their team right now.
Brian Baldinger on our Mattress Warehouse Hotline is our radio.com insider, and he's brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. $1,000 is up for grabs every single week at radio.com/picks. Baldy, we were having this debate in our first hour, and I thought your insight would add a lot. We're talking about Brandon Scherff, who went down this week for Washington, 3-time Pro Bowl guard. They franchise tagged him. He's the highest paid guard in the league this year. But this will be the third straight season he missed a lot of time. It's hard for me to justify, not only because he's a guard, but because of how much time he misses, paying him $14 or $15 million on a long-term contract this offseason. Where do you weigh in on that? The value at the guard position seems to be skyrocketing for whatever reason, and he's a guy that just hasn't proven particularly durable.
Well, I'm with you. Everybody loves Brandon Scherff. You'd love to have him on your team, but you know, you're not going to get 16 games from him. And when you start overpaying for guards, I can find guards in the fourth round. I mean, that's what you have to do. I mean, it's nice when you can get the fifth pick in the draft and he can be an all-pro player, but he's simply not that anymore. And so how you spend your money right now, especially with the cap going, you know, at least $20 million off what it is right now next year, you have to make those kind of considerations, and nobody wants to do that. But I mean, that body is pretty brittle right now, and we've seen the best of Brandon Scherff. Now, I'm sounding like I'm a detractor here, but I'm in agreement with you guys. I really am. I remember when the New Orleans Saints paid two guards, Jarry Evans and, you know, another guard, you know, the highest two paid guards in the league, and one got hurt, and, you know, they ended up going 7-9 for three straight years, and a big part was how they spent their cap. And so you have to make those considerations when you put your team together.
Brian, Dallas is in Atlanta onside kick recovery, or not going for two, away from being 0-2. They won a miraculous game. Credit to them for you know, continuing to chop wood. But they could be an 0-2 as well in this NFC East. Are there worrisome trends there in Dallas for you, or are they just kind of getting their feet wet with a new coach?
Well, they spotted the Falcons 20 points off a block punt and three running backs who fumbled. You know, they gave Atlanta 20 points, and they came from behind. And now, you're right, the onside kick made no sense. I don't understand any decision not to jump on that ball. I mean, in high school, you would jump on that ball. It's a live ball. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm just scratching my head still about how you allow C.J. Goodwin to recover that like that. But the Cowboys can flat out – I mean, they went up and down the field on the Falcons when they weren't turning it over. And this CeeDee Lamb is going to be a really good player. I mean, he already is, but he could do it all. He can block. He can catch. He's great after the catch. They're playing two free agent tackles right now. Terrence Steele is starting at one tackle at a Texas Tech as a rookie. I mean, that's not a great formula, but, you know, it didn't stop them from putting up 40 on the Falcons, you know, in the last three quarters of that game. And so I still think they can – defensively, they're not very good. They're just not. I mean, their defense line went to sleep last week. They didn't get much of a pass rush. And that being said, they still, you know, find a way to win that game. We'll figure out. Like, that could be a lightning rod for that team to come together the way they won that game, or it could just expose more weaknesses, like you said. But I have a feeling that, you know, they're going to be a playoff team, and they're going to win the East before it's all over.
Baldy, I saw this morning on Twitter you had watched the Jags. I've been blown away. I've kind of only mainly seen highlights, watched a little of the condensed NFL.com version of their game. Their coordinators, a former head coach here in Washington,
yes,
Jay Gruden, they seem to be moving the ball with ease. What's going on with that offense?
They're awesome to watch, guys. They're awesome. I mean, Jay Gruden is in his element. Jay Gruden, like, he just wants to coach football. He doesn't want to do anything else, and he wants to draw plays. And so they've got a bunch of – they're starting two rookies, you know, at running back. I mean, this – you know, Robinson out of Illinois State has been great. And then Laviska Shenault is their gadget player. He's in the slot catching balls. He's running fly sweeps. He's in the backfield running it, and he's really good. And really, Minshew is a guy that just doesn't really miss. They've got a number one receiver, DJ Chark. They've got a good offense line, although they lost the center last week. It didn't seem to make a difference. They were driving again last week to go win a game like they were the first week. You know, and they beat the Colts handily. They're a good team. They're putting these young guys in there, and they're playing them. And they're all making plays. They're fun to watch. It's a completely rebuild job, but I got to hand it. I texted Doug Marone after they beat the Colts the first week, and he said to me he doesn't know how many games they're going to win, but he loves the way that they play and the way that they practice. And every coach would take that right now.
Brian, real quick, Buffalo survives week two. New England, impressive even in a loss, out at Seattle with a chance to win that game there at the end. Handicap that division for us.
Well, Cam Newton has just completely energized that whole franchise. He's completing 70% of his passes. And it's the same talent that Tom Brady had, but the offense looks totally different. Cam Newton is completing. He's dinking and dunking down the field. He's running it. They had a chance on 4th-and-1 to win the game last week at the 1-yard line, and they couldn't get it in. Credit Seattle. But they're fun to watch now with Cam at quarterback. And defensively, you better do their homework to figure out who's playing defense for them, because you don't know. But they're good. And then Buffalo, Josh Allen, doesn't look anything like the kid that they drafted out of Wyoming. He is becoming a polished player. He beat and carved up the Dolphins from the pocket last week. Stephon Diggs looks like a great decision to bring in as their number one wide receiver. He leads the league in receiving yardage right now. And the offense is really fun to watch defensively. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They didn't play great last week against Miami, but they don't make many mistakes. They keep it all in front of them. They're very well coached. It's going to be a good battle between those two teams for AFC East supremacy.
Baldy, we always get smarter when we chat with you, man. Thanks for the time, and enjoy week three.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Enjoy it now. A lot of great games this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
You too. Thank
Brian
you, buddy.
Baldinger, Radio.com. Insider brought to you by the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. $1,000 up for grabs every single week. Radio.com/picks. By the way, the details just came out on Tyrod Taylor and why he couldn't play and why he was having chest pains, and they're crazy. So we'll tell you those next. Also, get to our double play right here on Grant and Danny. So let's pay this off real quick. I told you we'd tell you about the details on Tyrod Taylor's injury. So remember, it was all kind of mysterious. He had chest pains. He ended up getting taken to the hospital. Their starting quarterback on Sunday was their drafted top 10 pick, who nobody thought we'd see anytime in the first half of the season, Justin Herbert. And he supposedly found out he was starting, he said, seconds before he ran out onto the field. Now, within a minute, for sure, of when he took the field. Well, here's the details according to Adam Schefter, Danny, and this is painful to even hear. The Chargers team doctor accidentally punctured Tyrod Taylor's lung just before kickoff on Sunday. He was trying to administer a pain-killing injection to the quarterback's cracked ribs. According to the sources Schefter's talked to, when he went to give him that shot, so he was going to give him an injection. I don't know if it's numbing or what it would have done, but he was playing with cracked ribs, so I didn't realize that, but I'm sure people who follow the Chargers knew that or something. So Tyrod Taylor is one of these guys who's had just one bad beat after another. You know, he gets hurt, he loses his job, he gets signed, and they draft the guy, whatever it is. So he's just trying to stay on the field. So he's getting a shot literally the minute before kickoff to try to make his ribs not hurt as bad so he can go out and play football. And the team doctor punctured his lung with the needle. And that's why he had all that pain and he couldn't play.
Oh, my God, is my reaction
that
to that.
Isn't that awful?
Yes. Yes. So if you recall, your friendly neighborhood co-host here fell down the stairs right around Thanksgiving last year, and I did that. I cracked a rib. And that rib ended up a few days later when I sneezed, that real tough guy injury, that made a little tiny hole in my lung. And I had to stay overnight in the hospital after that happened. So I can tell you that's unbelievably excruciating. For that to have happened via screw up? Oh, my God.
Like, terrible.
I'm telling you this right now, I'm not that good of a person. We all kind of know that. If a doctor did that to me and gave me the pain that I was experiencing with a little tiny hole in my lung and a cracked rib, I would never forgive that person. I would never forgive them for that. I would hold a grudge against them and root for their misfortune for the rest of my days. I'm just telling you how much that hurt. I can't believe that. Oh, my God, is my
official
response.
Terrible. So,
yes.
Here was my response. I know that this is the least analytical and, you know, robotic answer I've ever provided. Tyrod Taylor gets his job back, as far as I'm concerned. Justin Herbert, you have to wait. We can't accidentally puncture his lung with a needle.
We can't do that.
And then replace him as our quarterback because you played well. He gets his job back. And until he stinks, he keeps that job. I mean, can you imagine that doctor and how he must have felt? Tyrod, I think I might have punctured your lung, actually.
Hey, this still hurts. Why? Well, it turns out your lung was punctured. What was it punctured by? The needle. First of all, he's playing with a cracked rib. That's a show.
That's
a
thing. Not the first quarterback probably to do that, but it's just one of those things that we don't talk about enough. The pain and the injuries that these guys played through. Week two of a pandemic-stricken weird offseason led into season, and he's just out there with broken ribs or cracked ribs. He's going to play and get tackled and get sacked and get chased by heat-seeking missiles from Kansas City for a game, by the way, against a team you're probably not going to beat, where you're probably not going to have a chance to win, and everyone's going to want you benched anyway. And he's like, no, I'm going to go play. No problem.
And again, I'm not comparing myself to an NFL player. I'm a doughy zilch. But I couldn't pick up my toddler, who was 1.5 at that point. I mean, you know what I mean? Like that just, it wasn't like a huge break. It wasn't like I'd cracked the
bunch. You could barely walk, if I remember. Yeah. Like I was
shuffling around
so slow.
Well, I didn't, for that week, I didn't know that it was cracked, right? It hurt. It wasn't pleasant. But once I sneezed and truly snapped it, and then, you know, had the hole in my lung or whatever, it was tiny. I mean, I was fine. I don't mean to make it dramatic, but I was fine. Just, it hurt like hell. That pain, I was beside myself with pain. And could you imagine if they were like, okay, let's tape it up. you could put on some padding right there, and here come the linemen to hit you. I mean, I couldn't do anything. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So it didn't make sense to me why, because I kept saying, well, there's no way Herbert actually found out seconds before the game if he got hurt in pregame warmups. So I guess they were giving him a shot, like, right before he ran out onto the field, and something happened. It went off the rails, and then they had to tell Herbert, you're in. Well, that's how he had 5 seconds to prepare. No wonder. I mean, he literally didn't have any time. He had no idea he was going to play until the offense ran out onto the field.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable is my reaction to that.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Beltway Blitz is next right here on TV.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.